Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. For years, when we talk about cancer, the villain in the story has been, you know, pretty much the same thing, a mutation.
Right, a faulty line of code in the DNA.
Exactly. Some kind of error in the sequence that tells a cell to just grow out of control.
Mm-hmm.
We're always looking for that broken sequence.
And that's been an incredibly successful way of thinking about it. But this deep dive, it asks a really different question. What if the DNA code is actually fine?
Okay.
What if the problem is in the machinery, the complex cellular system that reads and processes that code?
Now that's where it gets really interesting. Because you can imagine this tiny, almost archaic piece of what we used to call junk DNA.
A relic of our evolution.
Yeah, something that should be totally silent. But then in a tumor, it suddenly gets switched on and it becomes this rogue agent.
It acts like a molecular saboteur. It's not damaging the DNA itself, but it's physically getting in the way of the cell's messaging system.
Like throwing sand in the gears.
Exactly like that. It specifically targets mRNA splicing, which is one of the most essential processes in the cell.
And the result of that sabotage directly fuels the cancer's growth.
Yeah.
But through a completely non-mutational mechanism. So today our mission is to unpack how this hominid-specific RNA does all this. And for this, we celebrate the fantastic work of Sehang Zhu, Simon Lazarazzo, and the entire team from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, including the Cancer Center at Illinois. They've really pushed our understanding forward on this.
To really get this, we have to start with a little background on RNA production, specifically something called RNA polymerase the third.
All theory. I think of it as like the cell's essential housekeeper.
That's a great way to put it. It transcribes these small, really fundamental RNAs, things like tRNA, 5S RNA.
Stuff you need for basic function, like building proteins. It's critical, but it minds its own business.
Right. But what we see in almost all cancers is this big increase in POL3 activity. It's like the housekeeper has gone into overdrive.
And I'm guessing that has consequences?
Huge ones. Because this extra activity doesn't just make more tRNA. It accidentally starts waking up these small RNA genes that are supposed to be completely silent, ancient things.
So cancer is basically an alarm clock for these sleeping parts of our genome. And the one we're focused on today is a gene called SNRA.
Precisely. SNRA, it stands for small NF90-associated RNA isoform A, and it's a non-coding RNA that's unique to hominids.
So unique to us and their close relatives.
Yes, and it comes from these things called ALU sequences. These are themselves remnants of, you know, ancient genomic elements. So you're looking at a piece of our deep genomic past being weaponized by tumors.
That hominid-specific part feels really important. Like it could be a uniquely human vulnerability.
It could be. And while SNRA is normally only found in very specific tissues, like the testes, the researchers saw it pop up aggressively across many different human tumor types.
And previous work had already linked it to bad outcomes, right?
Oh, yes. It was known to promote cell proliferation, migration, all the hallmarks of aggressive cancer. But the how, the actual molecular mechanism, that was a total mystery.
So the team's big question was, who is this ancient RNA talking to inside the cell? What's it interacting with to cause all this chaos?
They had to go on a huge, unbiased fishing expedition to figure that out. And I have to say, their methodology was really clever in how they narrowed it down.
So how do you go fishing for an RNA's partners?
Well, first, you have to put some bait on the hook. They took the SNRA molecule and attached a little chemical tag to it, biotin.
Okay, so it's tagged.
Then they dumped this tagged RNA into cell extracts and let it mingle. Anything that physically stuck to the SNRA would get pulled out with it.
And then they identified everything they caught using mass spectrometry.
Exactly. And at first they found some of the expected things, you know, general RNA chaperone proteins. But the real surprise, the big catch, was this huge enrichment for core mRNA splicing factors.
Whoa, so components of the spliceosome.
Yes, specifically from the U2 and the U4, U6 SNRMP complexes. These are, foundational parts of the splicing machine.
But wait, how do they know it was really SNRA doing the damage? If POL3 activity is just ramped up everywhere in cancer, couldn't this just be, you know, background noise?
That is the critical question. And they didn't stop there. They focused in on the U2 SNRNP complex, and using a really sophisticated method called PR-SIC-UP, they confirmed a direct nucleotide-level interaction.
So not just in the same room. It was physically holding hands with one specific protein.
Exactly. A protein called SF3B2.
SF3B2. Wow. And what kind of interaction was it? Friendly.
Antagonistic. When they forced the cells to make more SNRA, the protein levels of SF3B2 actually went down.
So the presence of this rogue RNA was actually destabilizing an essential piece of the splicing machinery.
That's a huge piece of evidence, but they didn't just rely on that. They wanted to see the crime scene.
You mean spatially inside the cell?
Yes. They used a technique called HCRRNA-FES, which lets you light up the location of specific RNAs. And they found SNRA was hanging out right next to these things called nuclear speckles.
Okay, remind us what a nuclear speckle is and why that's so important.
Think of them as, like, the cell's central construction hubs for splicing. They're these little zones inside the nucleus where all the splicing factors and activity are super concentrated.
So SNRA wasn't just binding to a splicing protein.
It was positioning itself right at the assembly line, right where all the action is.
That seems way too convenient to be random. Did they check if the gene itself, the source of the RNA, was located nearby?
They did, which was another really smart move. They used a method called TSA-seq, and they found that the SNRA genes on chromosome 19 are, in fact, physically close to those nuclear speckles.
That's incredible. So the whole system seems optimized for this attack. The gene is in the right place to produce the RNA, right where it can do the most damage.
This is a very compelling picture.
Okay, so we know who it targets, SF3B2, and where at the nuclear speckles. So what's the actual consequence? What happens to the mRNA messages?
The main result is just bad quality control, inefficiency. When they overexpressed SNRA, they saw a huge spike in something called intron retention.
Intron retention. That's when the non-coding bits, the introns, don't get snipped out of the message properly.
Yes, and that usually creates a useless or even toxic final product. It's the classic sign that your splicing process is broken.
So it comes up the works.
And did they try the reverse?
They did. When they used siRNAs to get rid of SNRA, to silence it,
the intron retention levels went down.
They dropped significantly. Splicing got better across the board. And that pattern looked almost identical to what happens if you just give the cell more of the SF3B2 protein directly.
Which proves that SNRA is acting as an antagonist to SF3B2. You remove the blocker, the machine works again.
That's the logic.
But the spliceosome has to process thousands of different mRNAs. Was this damage widespread, or were there specific victims of this sabotage? This is where their analysis got really specific. They looked at which messages recovered the most when SNRA was gone, and those transcripts all shared two key features.
Let me guess. They're heavily reliant on the U2 complex. They're meeting near the nuclear speckles.
You got it. High U2 SNRNP occupancy and nuclear speckle proximity. The mRNAs that are most dependent on that specific machinery right at that location were the ones that suffered the most.
That shows a beautiful, terrible specificity. So what kinds of genes were being affected?
Well, connecting it back to cancer, the victims were enriched for really crucial cell regulators, things like subunits of the NERD complex, which remodels chromatin, and also factors involved in autophagy.
So things that control genome stability and how the cell recycles its own parts. You mess with those, you're going to have big problems.
Widespread problems. And of course, the next step was to see if this mRNA disruption actually translated to the protein level.
Right, because that's where it really matters for cell behavior.
And this is the key clinical link. When they got rid of SNRA and splicing improved, they saw protein levels for several key factors go up. And most importantly, they saw an increase in a well-known tumor suppressor called OGFR.
The opioid growth factor receptor. Its job is to put the brakes on cell growth.
Exactly. So the model is SNRA is active. It blocks the proper splicing of OGFR's message. The cell can't make enough OGFR protein and the brakes come off. The cell proliferates.
And did they see that happen in a dish?
They did. Depleting SNRA significantly slowed down cell proliferation. And then they took that idea and connected it directly to patient data.
Okay, what did they find in actual human tumors?
They found that high activity of the SNRA gene was a strong negative predictive factor. Patients with high SNRA activity had worse outcomes. The median hazard ratio was 1.52.
So it's not just a lab curiosity. This mechanism is actively contributing to disease progression in people.
It seems to be, yes.
So if we step back, what's the really big picture implication here for how we think about cancer?
The biggest thing is that it establishes a whole new type of pathway. It's a non-mutational way to get splicing dysregulation. You know, before this, when we saw splicing go wrong in cancer, we usually blamed it on mutations.
Right, mutations in genes like SF3B1, which is part of that same U2 complex.
Exactly. But what this paper shows is that this little non-coding RNA can achieve the exact same disastrous result as a major genetic mutation, but without changing a single letter of the DNA code.
It's phenocopying a mutation.
Perfectly. It's not a broken part. It's just a wrench thrown into a working engine. Yeah. And it seems to hit the weakest links the hardest, those mRNAs that already have sort of weak, inherently inefficient splicing signals.
But biology is never that simple.
Yeah.
Especially not in cancer. Were there any complexities to this disruption?
Absolutely. And this really highlights the challenge of ever trying to target something so fundamental. While getting rid of SNRA was mostly good, you know, boosting tumor suppressors like OGFR, they also saw something else. When splicing improved, they also saw an increase in the protein levels of an established oncogene called Timeless.
Timeless, that promotes proliferation. So fixing the splicing problem accidentally helped a cancer-promoting gene.
In some cases, yes. It just shows how widespread the effects are when you mess with the core splicing machinery. It's a bit of a double-edged sword, and the final outcome is probably very context-dependent.
It sounds like being able to track SNRI itself in patient tumors is the next big step, but I imagine that's pretty tough.
It is. That's a key limitation, they noted. SNRI is a small, highly structured RNA, and our standard large-scale RNA sequencing methods are just... they're not good at seeing it.
So they had to use indirect evidence.
Right. They used chromatin accessibility ATAC-seq to predict when the gene was active rather than measuring the RNA directly. It's strong evidence, but it's not the final word. We really need large-scale, small RNA-seq studies to nail this down clinically.
That sounds like the next deep dive for sure. Okay, let's try and pull this all together for you, the listener. Our first central insight is that this non-coding RNA, SNRA, gets reawakened in human cancers, and it fuels proliferation by acting as a direct molecular antagonist to the mRNA splicing process. Specifically, it targets the SF3B2 protein. And second, this finding really establishes a critical new pathway for how tumors can develop. It's splicing dysregulation that's driven by a non-coding RNA, not a genetic mutation, and it mimics the effects of one. And finally, here's a thought to take with you. Given that SNRA is this relatively recent hominid-specific evolutionary leftover, and now we know it can cause disease by jamming our basic cellular gears, what other silent non-coding RNA relics might be hiding in our genome, just waiting to be switched on and cause some of the human diseases we still can't explain?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Glow, little loops of coated breath and tidy rose, paltry whispers where it shouldn't speak, lighting up the shadows in a so-called sleep. Tiny signal in a crowded strand, calling to the proteins reaching out their hand. But the message stumbles on a broken line. Something in the splice won't fall in time. There's a tremor in the waveform, static in the chain. Entrance hanging on like ghosts that won't explain. Every miscut is a borrowed flame. Feeding the fire that forgets its name. You're sand in the splice machine, filling up the gears where the code should be clean. Holding back the songs that the exons would sing. Turning quiet errors into cancer's ring. You're sand in the splice machine, in the speckle light where the nuclei gleam. But when we wash you out of the stream, the cell remembers how the dream. In the speckle circle constellations, colors blur. You two ways to hear the branch points whir. SF3B2 starts to fade from view, like a missing tooth in a gear once true. Oh, OGFR's line is choked with noise, yeah. Hipponar's message never finds its voice. Timeless clock's been out of sync and strange. When the splice can't wash away the pain. Oh, there's a pattern in the chaos, hidden in the chart. Hazard curves rising like a restless heart. The silence in the intron starts to crack when we pull your red thread back. You're standing in the splice machine, filling up the gears where the code should be clean. Holding back the songs that the exons would sing, turning quiet errors into cancer's ring. You're standing in the splice machine, in the speckle light where the nuclei gleam. But when we wash you out of the street, of transcripts finally cross the line. Proteins rise like daylight on the screens. New edges drawn around malignant scenes. Every rescue junction, every healed seam turns a fatal script into a fragile dream. And somewhere in the charts of human fate, a curve bends down, arriving late. No more sand, splice machine. Let the scaffold spin where the strands convene. Let the broken codes earn to breathe. Future one more bend. No more sand in the splice machine. From the testis light to the cancer scene, we'll trace your shadow, cut you from the chain, till the speckled sky learns hope again.